You're listening to Advice from Your Advocates, a show where we provide elder law advice to professionals who work with the elderly and their families.
Welcome back to Advice from Your Advocates. I'm Bob Manor. I'm a certified elder law attorney in Michigan, and our practice is a practice that focuses a lot on helping folks that have family members with dementia. So it makes me really excited today that we have Mercedes Fernandez from Movement Geriatric Physiotherapy. This is a really interesting topic today, and I think you'll be fascinated by it. Mercedes, welcome.
Thank you, Bob. I am very grateful and very excited to have this conversation with you today.
So I'm really excited to learn more about your work and what you do and how you came to do that work. So first, just kind of tell us a little bit about what the Movement Geriatric Physiotherapy is and what you do.
Yes, absolutely. I've been in the practice of geriatric kinesiology for about 10 years. If not, it feels longer than that, but you know, 10 years is essentially the realm I've been in this professional work. Personally, I grew up with my grandfather who has passed away in 2017, but we were really close. He was very, very helpful in my infant years. My mother was kind of going through some illness after the pregnancy. And so my grandfather really stepped in. And from there, we created a bond. And so over my years of education and academics, I started to create some different companies. So my first company, I guess you can call it, was right out of college. I graduated with an exercise science bachelor's degree. So it was essentially personal training, kind of learning that aspect. And at that point, I knew that I wanted to work with seniors. I wanted to work with individuals with disabilities. And so over the generations and over years of working with different types of people, I have now settled into working specifically with older adults online, essentially post-COVID era, gave us the ability so that I can now work with many people in different parts of the world doing what I love the most, and that's movement.
That's, you know, the really interesting part of it is that you're able to do this with people throughout the world. That's fascinating. You know, one of the things that we have in common is that from an early age, we both had this affection and passion for helping seniors. My parents were a little older when I was born, and I was the youngest. And they had a passion for helping and volunteering at a senior center, and they dragged me with them all the time. So from an age of about 2 to 3 years old, I was hanging around people that were in their 70s and 80s, and I just always had that connection. And I appreciate the story about your grandfather. Tell me more about how this works from a standpoint of you doing this worldwide, that you can do it remotely. I'd like to hear more about how that works.
Yes. The beauty of what I found with remote work, essentially what I started that first iteration of personal training was an in-home service. And so I learned from that concept of what a client, and I don't like to use the word patient. They're part of our community, right? So people I'm working with, they really want to be comfortable, and depending on their mobility, it can be difficult for them to leave their house, to leave the space that they're in most of the time. And what I've worked with, when COVID happened, I really had to learn how to adapt to not being able to go to my clients' homes because of COVID. So what I found was there was a little bit of technical learning, you know, the computers and cameras, but it actually becomes really fun because you can screen capture, we can record now. If there's a lesson or a specific movement or exercise that a client really wants to focus on, we get to record that, and then I can send it to them and they can work and practice on that exercise over and over again versus, you know, having 10 sessions in the same week. So working remotely has actually been very awesome. And to everyone who's listening who doesn't know, I was able to move, you know, to different parts of the world. And so I think that's been really exciting. And on top of that, I have been able to learn new languages so then I can even expand more of my, it's really my passion. You know, it's less of the branding and like the business aspect of everything. It's my mission has always been how can I help older adults like everywhere? And so now with the accessibility of online training, it's been able to do that.
That's amazing, honestly. So we will let our listeners know you're actually calling in from Belgium today, correct?
Yes.
Which is very cool. So that's really, you know, that honestly is fascinating. All the advances that, you know, as awful as COVID was, there's so many things that have changed and that has given us more access. And I love that thought that now not only can you do the work that you do, but record it so that people, I've had the shoulder surgery with the, and I remember doing those exercises and it was great, but then I'd get home and I'd forget how to do it. Recording the sessions makes a ton of sense to me so that they can then, in between your sessions, they can then practice and continue that therapy.
Yes, it's known in the kinesiology world or the physiotherapy world. They're the same word. It's just different parts of the world that use it differently. But essentially, the study of human body movement, also known as physical therapy, that's the big key buzzword. A physical therapy's biggest headache is the paperwork, first of all, but behind the clinical aspect is that the most important part of physical therapy is doing your home exercises. And 90% of the time, a person in physical therapy will forget to do their home exercises because they don't have the paper, they forgot, or they get home and they're like, I'll just wait for my next session. So to your point, there's a lot of factors in exercise and motivation and remembering the exercise, remembering the form. If you don't physically see it or you don't have someone who's guiding you and kind of monitoring, then it's easier to just be like, I'll kind of just wing it or I'll forget.
Well, let's talk more about that. And I want to talk about the importance of this. So why, and again, I know you've talked about why you have this affection and passion for helping seniors, but why should seniors participate in this? I think it's fairly obvious, but I think we should say it. We should talk about why this is important for seniors as we age to participate in this type of a program.
Yes, the biggest thing, again, it's like a, how do I say it? It's like a not a pitch. The word is on my tip of my tongue. It's like a tagline. Yes, right. So the tagline is, if you don't use it, you lose it. How often are we sitting on the couch or the sofa watching a really long movie? You know, we get up and we're like, oh, my back is a little achy. Do we ever think I should go for a walk or how about I stretch? Over time, what happens to the body physiologically is the muscles start to get tighter. And so while we feel lethargic or we feel a little stiff, all of that is actually physiologically telling you that your body needs to be moved, your body needs to be stretched. Oftentimes when we start to age, and myself included, I know I look young and I am on the younger spectrum, I guess you can say, of life, but I've noticed physical changes myself in just, from early 20s to mid 30s. And so I can only imagine, I can see my parents aging now and essentially why it's so important to just, it doesn't have to be a hardcore exercise. It doesn't have to be, lifting weights like Arnold. It doesn't have to be like a marathon. Little movements make such an impact because we need the blood to circulate. We need the muscles to keep moving so they don't get stiff. Oftentimes that tightness is going to cause knee pain, which causes lower back pain, which then causes someone to then become immobile. It's too painful to walk. It's too painful to stand up. We start rounding in the shoulders. We start to have kyphosis, which is another word for the hunchback, kind of drop neck. And so all those things that might seem so minute and minuscule are eventually add up to the, unfortunately, like the stereotype of like, oh, well, we get old and we just don't move and we die. Yeah. It's like that paradigm needs to be broken.
Absolutely. And
it can be with just changing the mindset of a little bit of movement a day.
So I'd like to get into in a minute more about like what this looks like when you have a session with someone. But I'd first, I'm very curious about how do people find you? How do they, you know, they know that this is something that they should be doing, or maybe their kids or their spouse is encouraging it. How do you find your clients?
Yes. I've been for me personally has been referral, online marketing, you know, word of mouth has been the way that I've grown podcasts, of course, and contributing with well-known media outlets. So partnerships and such, but I think that if anyone who's listening, it's really great that you can, you know, we have Google nowadays where you can search online. The thing that I found the most when I was beginning out a couple years back was that a lot of physical training, personal training, if like a daughter or a son or a grandchild is looking for their parent or grandparent, there's not many trainers who, or personal trainers or physical therapists who are focusing on elderly or elders or geriatric patients, clients. So it's really important that you vet, and that can be a long process. But I've seen since COVID, there has been a little bit of a shift in the younger generation who is starting to pay much more attention to our aging population. So I'm saying that in a positive way of if you were to look in your area, maybe even asking social services, if there are some like silver sneakers is really popular, AARP. Mm-hmm. But if you really wanted to specialize in someone who does direct work like I do, it's a matter of doing a quick search.
So then what is your typical client as far as are they typically, first of all, like what age would be your typical client? But secondly, is it often or most of the time where they've experienced some kind of physical setback, or is it sometimes that they're just realizing that they want to be more flexible for their future? Is it usually that they're recovering from something, or is it some of your clients that are just realizing that they want to be better in the future?
I would say it's a little bit of a wash with both. Most, in all honesty, it usually is the beginning, the first one you mentioned. There's typically, and this is found in research as well, that a person won't actually seek help until something happens. So I'm usually contacted by the child or the grandchild or the spouse. Because there was a fall, there was a hospitalization, there was some kind of illness in which their health, they really had to take a hard look about, if we don't fix this or if we don't get dad to move, you know, he might just fall down the stairs again and something can be worse. He's getting weaker. I've had some, an example of an elderly man who knew he was really ill. He was terminally ill, but he wanted to be able to walk to enjoy the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. So he really just needed companionship. He needed security because his wife wasn't available to go out and walk with him. So I was able to assist in that regard. So there's really different levels, but most of the time it's not, you know, it would be beautiful. I always hope that's kind of my mission, right? To get people to be more aware of, hey, you know, I need to just prioritize my health and what does that look like and how can I do it? But unfortunately it's usually the latter. The negative aspect of a fall or an injury is the precursor to getting help.
Yeah, that's, you know, we talk about this a lot in our office about, you know, we really encourage people to plan ahead and we do a lot of education to try to get folks to be prepared for the likely future of aging and some of the, you know, and the possibility of even having some memory loss, things like that. But the reality is at least half of our clients come in when there's a crisis, when there's an emergency. And then and that's fine, too. It's just like you say, I always hold out hope for the idea that more and more people will be wanting to, you know, get in front of things, be, you know, prepare for their future and make their future, you know, more comfortable. So I understand where you're coming from. So talk us through what it sounds like. to me that you are very customized in each person that you work with. But talk us through, if you can, any what a session would typically look like, or what might be how you might run a session with a senior.
Certainly. And before I jump into that, I just want to say I really value what you're doing as well at the firm in helping that future planning and helping people get set up, because I personally have experienced in the last 6 years so much loss, unfortunately, like unexpected loss, kind of not an unexpected loss for older adults passing away, but almost always, if not all of them, were not prepared for their estate, for their will, for all this. And it has been such a mess to see like my family, close family and acquaintances kind of go through that struggle. So I just wanted to say that.
Thanks.
I really appreciate that, what you're doing here. So a session, I guess, essentially what my design is, you know, I get to know who I'm working with. We always go through, you know, what are the needs? How do we tailor what your goals are? How do we get there? Do you have things in your house that are accessible? Maybe things that are not accessible. I always encourage a home safety evaluation as well, which I include, is assessing the exercise room, wherever the computer is going to be, just to ensure that, you know, we're practicing safely. And then if there's a caregiver involved, including them and kind of talking about that as well. And
nice.
So, yeah, there's the thing with my work is that there's varying levels of mobility. And, you know, that includes, do they have a mobility aid? Are they using a walker? Do they live alone? Is there a caregiver? Do they want the caregiver present? You know, is it a gender? Do some people feel comfortable with someone present, someone not present? You know, so there's, there are different aspects and different levels of mobility in the sense of, do they need help? Are they going to be okay when they're alone? What are they able to do without me there, physically there, and without a caregiver as well? So different aspects that a lot of people don't think about, but we go through that in detail in the first session. And then after that, we plan to meet depending on the treatment plan. And then from there, we always record and it gets sent to them.
And I appreciate that you incorporate the caregivers. I think that's really smart. What is the average age or typical age of the folks that you're working with?
Yes. So it does start with the 65 and up. Mm-hmm. But the typical age that I work with is around 70 to 78. I've had some older clients, but I would say the range typically starts around 70s, mid-70s.
This is going to be a difficult question, and I'm not sure if it's something that you've been able to incorporate. But one of the things we know about our clients, often they have some event, they need to get stronger, they need to get those skills back. And what complicates it is if they have some memory loss or dementia. Do you ever have clients that you work with that also are experiencing some memory loss or dementia?
Thank you for asking. I thank you for setting it up in such a beautiful way. I personally haven't I have worked, but not paid work, in a private setting where a client is experiencing dementia or Alzheimer's. However, I have personal experience and academic experience working with an individual who is starting to experience that. So I can't say that I've been in memory care, but yeah. I do have experience. I understand what the cycles are. I understand, you know, if there's a trigger, what to do, how to back that up. I do think that it's still important that they get their movement.
Right.
However, it is going to be more of a repetition rather than a progression of gaining movement or gaining strength and such. I'm not saying that it's impossible. I'm just saying that it's a different treatment plan.
Sure.
So it's part of it.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And yeah, it's definitely more challenging. We see this with our clients sometimes that they've had a fall or something like that, and then they go for therapy, whether it be physical therapy or occupational therapy or whatever, and it becomes very challenging, and almost to the extent that sometimes they just won't participate if there is memory issues. And so it is unfortunate, but I agree with you 100% that it's still so important. And movement and, you know, even interaction. You had mentioned about one of your clients that it was just needed that interaction too. And I think all of that is very important to maintain, you know, a healthier lifestyle. I never say, you know, that we can always return to at a certain age, we can't always return to complete and perfect health, but we can be healthier. It can't be great, but it can be better.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And something to add here is that for anyone listening who may be dealing with a new onset of memory loss or someone in their immediate circle, what I've found and something so beautiful is both my grandmothers actually had Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And both of them, what they both loved to do the most and I got to do with them was just a simple take them out for a walk.
Yeah.
And one of my grandmothers, eventually the dementia got to a point where she was no longer able to walk. So even then you can a wheelchair or mm-hmm. a walker, a mobile walker with a chair, a four-wheel walker, the experience outside for them, for someone who is in later stages of dementia and Alzheimer's, it's a new experience every time. So while we've been on the same route for them, because there are aspects that they don't remember, it's a new walk. It's almost like a child going through like a candy store and then going to a new candy store, right? So it's a beautiful experience to be with them in that aspect of they might not be moving as much, especially if they're in the wheelchair, but they're getting outside, they're getting the companionship, and they're also being stimulated by the environment. So that, I think, adds to, while it's not movement, it's still a sense of health.
You just triggered a memory of mine from when I was a small child, and my grandfather, so I'm in Michigan, and my grandfather lived in Michigan his whole life, and there's a particularly beautiful falls called Tequamenon Falls in a very remote area of Michigan, and he had never been there, and it was one of his things that he always wanted to be there, but now he didn't have that physical capability, and it is a trail, and it's not an overly rough trail, but it's a trail. It's not paved. I don't know if it is now, but at the time it was not. And so we got a little chair and a walker, like you had mentioned, and he would walk about 10 feet and then sit down, take a rest, walk about 10 feet, sit down, take a rest. So he got to see the falls. And I thought that was really cool. It's an example of how important this type of thing is. Even when somebody doesn't have that ability to walk the mile to the falls, they might be able to take a few hours and still enjoy it. You know, people were walking by and they would talk to him and they'd say, oh, this is great that you're coming up here. And it was just a very enjoyable experience, to the extent that I still remember it, you know, probably 45 years later.
Yes. And that's those are the moments and makes me feel so happy to be in this work and to do my mission and my passion, because those memories really stick with you. And I hope that what I'm doing can translate to the younger generations, or even doesn't even matter. Doesn't need to be a younger generation, just everyone, to bring awareness to the beauty that is around an aging population, our aging community. You know, I live in Belgium now, and it's a big bike community, and I see older adults who are probably well in their 80s still riding a bike. And it's so cool. And you know, they're out there, they're having their coffee. I've seen a few times, and it just always opens my heart. These beautiful seniors who are, it's cobblestone, it's like, you know, very Europe. Mm. They are walking in the rain because it's Belgium. Right. They are walking in the rain with their walker and they are going for it. And they just like, they will take their time, and it might take them, to your point, they might take them a couple hours, but they are relentless and they will keep going. And I just think that experience, that fervor, that drive is so inspiring. And so I always, you know, I tell people around me like, hey, have you seen a senior today? What can you do to help them? You know, it's so simple to be like, hey, can I hold an umbrella for you? Mm. You know, and that memory will stick with you. So I appreciate you sharing your story.
Now, do you do mostly one-on-one? In other words, if there was an organization that wanted to have you do some work with them and it was a group of seniors, let's say in an assisted living type setting or something like that, would you be able to do that also, or you do primarily one-on-one?
Yes, it's a great question you ask. I haven't had this question. I primarily do one-on-one remotely, mm-hmm. and I haven't done a group setting remotely. So I can do it. I actually used to work in many assisted living communities mm-hmm. over my years of experience. And that's always fun. I had a great experience with getting creative with group classes. There mm-hmm. is all levels, so you just kind of go with the flow with it. Remotely, I haven't quite done that, but I don't think that it would be challenging.
Yeah. So for folks that are interested in learning more about your services, learning more about you, what's the best way to get a hold of you? What's the best way to interact with you?
Yes, I have a one-stop shop. It is movement.info. So instead of .com, it's info. And movement is spelled with a U. So for anyone who's like, that doesn't make any sense, it's the French way. It is a spell movement in French. So it's movement.info.
So let's repeat. Go ahead, please.
I was going to say, you find everything there. You can find them. There's a chat button that goes directly to me. You can email me. I have all my free YouTube videos on there that are like, you know, at-home exercises. There's all my articles that I've done for publications, podcasts, you name it. So everything is just simplified. It's on that website.
So I'm just going to repeat that because we want to make sure people spell it right. It's movement.info. Is that right? Okay. And I'm glad to hear that you have the YouTube videos. I think that I encourage everybody to check that out. Check out her YouTube videos. Make sure you like her YouTube videos because I think you're doing great work. And I really appreciate you coming on today and helping explain some of this to us.
Thank you, Bob. I really appreciate it. And likewise, keep doing what you're doing. And it's people like us who are, you know, I personally like to believe that we're really making an influence. We're that drop in the ocean that's rippling out. Thank you.
So if you've enjoyed this podcast and you want to hear more, don't forget to subscribe to Advice from Your Advocates. You can subscribe at pretty much any podcast, anywhere you listen to podcasts, or you can go to our website and YouTube if you want to actually see us. Most people probably just listen, but don't forget to subscribe so that way you get notices of all the future podcasts. So thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. To learn more, visit ManorLawGroup.com.